This season of Underneath It All is sponsored by Salomon. Salomon enables people to play, progress, and connect with nature. In a society where speed and stress have taken over, people take less and less time to play and connect with nature. Play is Salomon's essence. Play to enjoy, play to progress, play with the rules. Salomon creates the next generation of gear and experiences that make people live the joy of progression of their sports throughout their unique mindset. You can learn more about Salomon and their purpose and mindset located on our show notes. This is the seventh episode of the Underneath It All Trail series, a podcast that tells the story of a holistic approach to an outdoor adventure as I attempt to backpack from Canada to Mexico. My hope is that by bringing you on this adventure and sharing these conversations between me and a few others, you can learn how to have conversations about your mental health with people that you trust, you can have a better understanding of others around you, learn to accept and fully embrace your truest narrative, and continue breaking the negative stigma that has engulfed mental health. If you had told me 3 months ago that I would be working as a therapist and hardly ever wanting to leave my house, I probably would have laughed in your face. This definitely doesn't sound like me at all, or the person that I presented to be. I'm technically still supposed to be thru-hiking the CDT, but instead, I've been spending my days in my little office, music studio, seeing clients via teletherapy, baking many delicious pastries, and spending time with Eric, my husband, and the dogs. This alternate reality reminds me of a conversation I had with Eric 4 years ago, when I distinctly remember telling him how I would never live in a home or stay in one place indefinitely. And yet, here we are today. Although I had the opportunity of a lifetime to be on the CDT, I made the choice to come home, which technically makes me a quitter. Quitter. That word used to sting a little more than it does now, but I can't deny it still kind of does. Capitalism has its own connotations of quitting, ones that I don't agree with. There are so many factors that are at play in our day-to-day, and most of these factors are happening without us ever knowing it. And yet, capitalism tells us to ignore the factors and keep pushing to reach the goal no matter what, and for God's sake, don't ever quit. I've noticed that our society elevates these stories above all others, as if these stories are the only way to motivate us to live our life to the fullest. But what if living the life to the fullest has no end goal, or if it's completely different than what we imagined it to be? Does changing our mind make us weak? Is that what weakness is? Do we deserve to be shamed? Do we deserve to be criticized? In this episode, I'm excited to introduce you all to a new friend of mine, Courtney. She is currently receiving her master's and is passionate about advocating for all parts of wellness, specifically functional medicine and biohacking. Don't know what that means? Well, I didn't either, but the way Courtney explained it to me in this interview, you can instantly feel how this resource has changed her life completely. And so, I'll let her do most of the explaining.
My name's Courtney. I currently work at Marion Polk Food Share, so I help with food drives part-time while also going to school with the plans of getting my license to become a certified nutrition specialist. So my official degree will be like human nutrition and functional medicine. That's my main kind of life right now. Whenever I can squeeze in outdoor stuff, I get that in. I love backpacking, but also I would say I just love trying things. Growing up in Central Oregon, I was very much outside all the time, and my husband grew up in that world big time.
You're getting your master's. Yeah, tell me how you decided to study this and like why you decided to study this.
I remember as a first grader being very frustrated with my lunch. My mom would pack me lots of vegetables and fruits, and other kids or school lunches, you know, didn't have that abundance of fruit and vegetables. And I remember being like frustrated with that and like wanting to start a community garden and different things, but I never fully knew I would take this much of a niche until my own health stuff kind of came into the picture. And my dad has he has celiac as well, which is something that I went through that kind of put me into the functional medicine world. But it definitely was like a process of like narrowing and narrowing my focus.
I love mental health so much because I struggled with it so much, you know, and I think that me being able to understand like my mental health and like finally being able to, like what we talked about the other day, like advocate for mental health is, I'm so passionate about it because I know how much it means to me and how much I needed it. And it sounds like you also had a similar experience with what you've been going through. So I'd love to hear like, yeah, more about kind of that journey for you.
My journey started, I was a senior in high school and I went from playing tennis competitively, running cross country. I was student body president, like all those things, perfect college resume. All of a sudden, I just didn't want to get out of bed. I remember my teeth hurt. I was trying to convince my mom that my teeth were falling out. They hurt so bad. Just little random things that no one could really understand. My mom and I would just sit in the car outside the emergency room because I was in so much pain. We knew going in would be like no answers. One time they told me, the doctor said, "You're literally full of shit," because I was so constipated. But nobody was like connecting the dots that like, oh, my depression symptoms, my constipation, like nothing was being connected and looking at the root cause. And it just kept spiraling until I left for school. That's when it got really dark. I don't remember a lot of that time. Now I understand that I just had a lot of inflammation in my brain, but all the symptoms of depression, anxiety, I don't know that I was sleeping very much, was kind of bounced around between several different pharmaceuticals. Within like a year, I think I was on 4 different ones, which I totally believe in them being supportive. Going through all of that many at once was pretty harmful to my inflamed brain. Finally, my parents pulled me out of school. I mean, I was failing out, so that's kind of all that made sense.
You couldn't be present because you were in pain and your depression was so bad?
Yeah, my roommates actually called my parents. They said that I wasn't really leaving my room. It was a very deep depression at that point.
And no one knew why. And like, there wasn't like life stuff happening. It just felt like it was so internal.
Yeah, my life was rather perfect. Like, I have incredibly supportive parents, good friends. I mean, school is stressful, but not really. It was fun. It was everything I wanted, at least, you know. Like, why isn't this feeling good? I'm from Bend, and my dad and I moved to Portland. They put me in an inpatient mental health program where I kind of had group therapy and my heart rate was monitored. I just learned a lot of coping tools that were incredible, but still wasn't really getting the relief I needed.
It wasn't addressing the root.
Yeah, it wasn't addressing the root. It was definitely some incredible tools and things I won't ever forget that I still use today, but it was kind of a surface level type of treatment.
I mean, I've worked in mental health and in psychiatric hospitals and stuff. Usually to get into a psychiatric hospital, and especially like inpatient and like for that long, you have to have pretty severe symptoms.
I have this memory of the first day my dad and I were walking out and he put his arm around me and he was like, "I'm not sure you belong here." And we just kind of both stood there, like neither of us responding, because we were also like, but where else do we go? Didn't fit the extremeness of it, but we were also just desperate at the same time. My narrative had kind of been written by the therapists that I had seen at school, and that was what we were listening to, which it was a fraction of the story. I spent a total of 6 weeks there, but didn't really get better. It was more like, here's how to live with it. And at that point, I kind of relinquished any idea of going back to school. I didn't think that was in the cards for me. I moved back to my hometown and I got a job at an amazing restaurant with some incredible people that helped me through a lot. And I waited tables. It was about 8 months of that where I just kind of embraced the fact that this was my life now.
But how did you actually feel about it?
I don't think I was fully processing it. So I'd work during the day and then I would clean my dad's apartments or offices at night, and I would play TED Talks. I think that was the avenue that reminded me I cared. I wanted to learn. There's one called Champions about a woman who swims, I think, the English Channel, keeps getting stung by jellyfish and just all this crazy stuff. And I've listened to that one so many times because it really got me through that time. And then I enrolled in community college and took one class at a time. My mom was seeing a doctor just for a checkup. And he gave her a list of some symptoms. My mom was like, this isn't me, but this is Courtney. All of a sudden, I went from thinking I had to embrace this life of depression and anxiety to oh no, there's an underlying condition that we can treat. My mom and I call it getting my brain back. Doctor came up with a protocol and we started addressing a chronic infection, my celiac disease, which had pretty much killed my gut at that point, so I wasn't absorbing vitamins. Within a year, I had my white blood cells were back. I went from only being able to take 4 credits at a time to I took 20 credits. I did my junior, senior year in one, which is on brand with original me before my brain was inflamed. It was such an incredible gift. It has taken a good 6 years to really start rebalancing everything, but I had watched my dad go through naturopath program, and I think that's what made me believe there's more to this story than just what Western medicine has to offer.
What kind of model of care did they follow?
First doctor I saw, he had his naturopath license and his chiropractic license. He specializes in chronic infection.
Can you explain what chronic infection is?
A lot of people think of Lyme disease is one. Epstein-Barr, which is mono. If your body can't handle the infection when you are exposed to it, it becomes chronic in your body and it just kind of lives in your body forever. And so you have to learn how to keep it not active. That was the first real doctor that I felt saw me. I think a common thing that chronic disease and mental health have is but it's real and out of my control. He believed me. It wasn't that emergency room parking lot fear. It was, no, you hear my symptoms. We did some pretty aggressive Lyme disease treatment. I have the presence of Lyme disease bacteria in my body. And that helped a ton with my fatigue. I regained a lot of myself and was better able to continue with life. This last winter, I actually had just started grad school and we got a puppy and also pandemic. And I got really sick again. Probably the sickest I'd been since the first time. It was actually one of the weirdest things to experience those same mental health symptoms, but with my perspective now and understanding, this is my body telling me it's on fire. It was fascinating. So I found a naturopath over here. I'm no longer in my hometown. I found a doctor that is newer to the practice of naturopath medicine, and she had more of a functional approach to my healing. She took a look at my hormones and cortisol, progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, all of those, and thyroid was a big one. They were all out of balance. all of them were not where they were supposed to be. We did a little bit of the Lyme treatment, wondering if it was active again. But for the most part, what brought me relief and what I think has so far sustained my well-being is the rebalancing of all those hormones.
What does it mean when to like rebalance hormones?
It's an emerging field to apply this. A big test is cortisol. There's like four different ways cortisol can be imbalanced. One of them is it doesn't spike in the morning. It spikes at 11 p.m. So I have a really hard time getting out of bed in the morning, but then I could stay up all night, which is very much how my depression would present itself. But then some people experience cortisol just like high all the time. And that's usually presents itself more as anxiety or ADHD type symptoms. And then there's another one that's just, it's kind of all over the map and you kind of have everything. So cortisol is like an essential hormone, but it also, we have to figure out how to balance it.
So is it the fact that when the cortisol is gone or like it's depleted or it's not present, is that when you start experiencing like the depressive symptoms or is it the back and forth? How does it affect mental health in particular?
So a lot of times if you are exposed to a chronic infection or trauma or just chronic stress even, your cortisol will spike and it will stay at this high level for as long as it can. But then you'll get what's called adrenal fatigue and you won't have any more cortisol to make and you'll drop into that depression. You can kind of go on a roller coaster between using cortisol and being in fight or flight.
How do you know the difference between like flight or fight mode and you're just like constantly going in that high versus just having a ton of energy? Is that something that personally we can like determine in our own selves or?
I mean, I haven't read much research on that, but I think what I would say is cortisol is good. We do use it to stay awake and have a good day. I think a normal amount of energy means that your cortisol is spiking in the morning and then slowly throughout the day it tapers off and then you're able to fall asleep at night. That would be a healthy amount of energy and cortisol. But if you're finding yourself energy all the time or in and out at the wrong time, you need some support to help teach your body, like, no, that's not when I need cortisol.
That is so interesting. Of course, it makes sense that mental health completely intertwined with like these levels of chemical imbalances. And yet, it's so interesting how little they're spoken about in like the same context.
Yes, you know? That makes my mind explode. And that's the idea of functional medicine, is that we look at all areas of health. That you look at your environment and your psychology and your biology and your social life and how all of that together impacts your well-being.
It's a holistic approach.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I like to say biohacking because it sounds more like a fun way to do it. Like when I'm taking my vitamins, I'm like, oh, I'm hacking my body right now.
No, that's what it means.
Functional medicine addresses the root cause of your symptoms. In Western medicine, you might go and say, like, I have acid reflux, and they give you a pill for acid reflux. Where if you go see a functional medicine practitioner, they're going to say, let's figure out what is causing that acid reflux. What imbalance in your gut is occurring, or your hormones are.
So when you went to that doctor, did you say, like, hey, I'm having depressive symptoms?
This new doctor, I was better able to advocate for myself because of school and just my past experience. And I definitely was. I was like, my depression and anxiety are so bad right now that I am not functioning in regular life. I think I brought up panic attacks as my like number one complaint. And I think that's the best way I've found to advocate is start with the most important thing that you want to focus on, and then slowly throughout appointments or even your own journey of figuring out food sensitivities or whatever it is that you're trying to improve well-being, it's that one step at a time that is key for both the practitioner and yourself.
it sounds like we have very different experiences of like mental health, which I think is also good. I've always had it. And so this is the first time I've had relief of it. To me, it's like, okay, the reason why I have so much depression and anxiety is the core issue is the fact that I had a lot of trauma growing up. There's depression in my family and there's anxiety in my family. But do you feel like there is still more to a lot of people's mental health than just these diagnoses?
I'm actually really glad you brought that up. I sort of got lucky because I have a before story, and I think that's what makes me so like steadfast in talking about this. But when we go through trauma, our body completely rewires itself. It sort of goes into a fight or flight. Now its existence is scary because we were taught that it's scary. So then in order to tell our body that we're safe again, doing things like therapy and learning coping mechanisms and meditation are super important. But then in order to help our body rewire its way and its normal metabolic processes and the nervous system and all of that, we have to do some biohacking or functional support also. And then together, I believe, and I think the research is starting to prove, that we can achieve like true healing and overcome that trauma.
Anybody, I feel like, who has depression knows like you're almost fighting against yourself sometimes, and like you're almost fighting against your own chemicals a lot of times. I just started antidepressants a year ago, and it has really made me realize how much more there is going on to my depression and my anxiety. That also kind of scares me because it's like opening Pandora's box of just like, oh, fuck. If this is true, that there's really more to it than just coping skills and like learning how to navigate it, what else does that mean? You know, how do you navigate this space where, especially in today's society, it's just not as approachable and it's not as big of a resource, I guess. Whereas like, it seems like, yeah, we're definitely pushing more towards medicine, but unfortunately a lot of the medical resources we have is like a pill to fix things, right? But how do we get the energy to pursue that kind of functional approach when like you're depressed all the time and it's not really like an available resource?
This question stumps me a little bit because it's so hard to pull yourself out of bed. For me, it's my bed. I think that one step at a time is definitely a big part of that. I don't love the example of eating an elephant, but the how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? I do a ballerina count a lot. I'm just like one and two and. I think patience too is another critical step, both patience with yourself and the process. Because when you're depressed, it can be really hard to take vitamins, to eat vegetables. I know I only want to eat mac and cheese. For me though, this approach is my source of hope. Experiencing all the symptoms this second time around, I don't think I can fully put words to it because this time I was like, no, I got it. And of course, there was still the voice that questioned it, but I had that story of hope for myself. I think that's where social support is huge. My now best friend, she ran a community called More Than Line. That was huge for me getting through a lot of it. So hearing other people's stories that we're all just trying.
The second time around, it was like a more realistic goal because you knew that there was more to it and it probably helped you stay open to more resources and help too.
There was actually a week where I was still like, I can do this by myself. I know what I need to do. And I would find myself just sitting in my car outside the naturopath office that I hadn't made an appointment at yet. Okay, tomorrow I'll make the appointment. And then it was about a week of that. And then it was like, okay, it's time. It changed my life. And I am so grateful for the practitioners that I had that sort of said, no, no, this isn't your story. This doesn't have to be your story.
The best times in my life where I felt the depression wasn't taking over my life has always been when I'm in the backcountry. Obviously, something happens there chemically that I'm eating a lot more. I'm doing a lot more. I'm moving. I'm in the sun. Because of that, I think I chased that high, I guess, for a while. And then I realized I can't keep doing that, right? That's like why I left the trail this year. It was like, I can't just it's not realistic for me to chase this, but at the same time, it's like the only time that I feel like my chemicals are almost balanced. What is happening to us when we're like in the backcountry chemically?
There are some theories about like we're not like meant to be in a society like this, so of course we're happier outside. There's also some research that says the microbes that we're getting from real plants that aren't exposed to all the chemicals are super good for mental health. They produce all kinds of like serotonin and dopamine and fatty acids that are essential to our mental health just by like brushing up on a fern or getting dirty. I kind of hear what you're saying, and there's like a balance between that like high and addiction feeling and no, this is who I am. I know personally, I can feel the difference between the two. When I just feel more centered in my daily life, the outdoors feel more like home and less like a fix.
And I think that kind of plays into this like idea of contentment. If it's not sustainable for me to be outside all the time, so I'm trying to find like this sense of peace and this sense of contentment in my everyday life. There's only so many coping skills I can do, and there's only so much I can do. It's been hard being back. And I think, you know, people talk about it all the time, like post-hike but depression. Post any adventure, like coming back to reality is really, really hard. And I think a lot of it is because we are trying to find this sense of relief that we don't get in our daily life. And it's something that we feel outside as well. It's a lot harder to find a space of contentment in society right now because it just doesn't seem like there are resources to kind of stabilize that chemically or neurologically, or you know what I mean?
One of the things my doctor says frequently is the level of toxins we're exposed to are blocking so many of our pathways that we need more support than ever just for daily life to be good. It's such a balance between that, getting that green space and finding a way to design your daily life. My husband, he was a physicist and built microscopes, was like, nope, I need to be outside all day. And now he is an agronomist, not using his degree, and he is in the dirt all day with plants. His happiness has entirely shifted, and we're so lucky that that was accessible to him.
My husband, Eric, he has to be around plants, and that's something I've kind of had to tell him over and over and over again. Like, your happiness depends on it. Like, I can tell the way that you interact with everything around you that, like, when you're around plants, it's like your daily life is so much better. I'm doing everything I can to find contentment in my everyday life. And I honestly, like, I'm really proud of all the progress that I've made. However, I'm still on antidepressants. And I talked to my psychiatrist and my therapist recently about how it's been a year. And I don't think that it's unhealthy to be on antidepressants. But as someone who's such an empath, I'm such a feeler. And I needed the antidepressants to get me through processing a lot of my trauma. But now that I've kind of processed that with a therapist and feel so much fucking better, I feel like I'm ready to start tapering that because I liked the part of myself that felt very deeply. I'm thinking about what it means to taper out, but I'm also really scared. I don't want to lose this sense of contentment and happiness. And like, I'm doing all I can to like make sure I'm implementing all of these coping skills. But at the end of the day, I've had so much trauma in my life. It would be stupid for me to deny that there isn't something chemical happening in my body. And so I'm nervous to taper because of that, you know?
I was scared to go off. I didn't trust my brain at all. I think that naturopathy and functional medicine and that world is an incredible tool for you specifically come off of antidepressants if that is a goal. Personally felt more myself off of them in ways, but it was also a journey in itself. You've put in so much work on the emotional side to work through the trauma. that now you have to tell your body we're safe here in this new place and this new world that I've designed. Because it's still operating, it's programming like a computer is still operating under that trauma code. So now you have to give it a new code and say, no, this is a safe code. And I'm hoping that's where this medicine is going, is to then heal from everything. Like, I'm hoping that we can get veterans with PTSD access to this type of healing so it can be a memory without that extreme emotion.
It's taking mental health a step further, right? Taking the symptoms of what we've gone through and like the trauma of what we've gone through, actually seeing full healing. I'm interested in this, but also don't want to get my hopes up, right? Because it's like scary.
And it's such a trial and error process, because that's the whole point. Each of our codes are unique, and yes, they're very similar in ways, they're very different in other ways, and what genes are turned on and what genes are turned off. So in that phase of trial and error, it can be super frustrating, and what works for one person might not work for another, and as is with psychotropic medication too. But it's so much bigger once you start bringing in all the vitamins and hormones. And that's kind of where I think we've talked about the biopsychosocial model. That's really what helps me guide my advocacy for myself with my doctor, what guides my daily choices, is just kind of this Venn diagram of biology, psychology, environment, and in social life. And my goal for contentment is all those are balanced. My body's functioning properly. My mental health is functioning well. I'm able to maintain my relationships, and my environment is supportive. But it never works that way. They're never even. They're always kind of fluxing in and out. I have to focus more on one, and then the other gets better. And what I've realized now is contentment isn't the perfect Venn diagram. It's actually learning to allow the Venn diagram to flux and exist, and embracing each phase of that.
That's what I hear you saying, is like accepting the fact that it's going to flow in and out. You can't just deny a part of it. And I think, you know, I have always like believed in the psychology, and I've always believed in like environment, and because the biology part has always intimidated me and like it's really overwhelming, it's like something that I've definitely put off. I'm hearing that that's not necessarily benefiting me.
No, you have done great up to this point. This is the story that you're, the line that you're on, and that's what you've had to support. And I think that's why I'm pushing myself to talk about my story more. I somehow was given access to a broader perspective, if broader is the right word. I just want more people to be cohesive. I mean, if I could tell myself, I think I would say that in this modern world, it is still hard. Life is inherently difficult. And I mean, I do think that gave me an incredible perspective, but I also hope that other people aren't beating themselves up for feeling sad for no reason.
How do we encourage others to look at this part of our mental health? I mean, obviously we're doing it through podcasting, but
just like you did with meditation, I think just starting somewhere, even if, I mean, I don't fully recommend self-prescribing supplements, but that's where I found myself, was in the vitamin aisle, starting with one symptom. What can I do to better support this symptom? And maybe that looks like ashwagandha, or maybe that looks like increasing your vegetable intake or lessening the sugar intake. And just starting with little things. It doesn't even have to be food related. With biohacking, I invested in a sauna this year, which was a pretty big purchase for where we're at, but it has done wonders for my ability to be more normal again. So just finding tools that are within your accessibility, I think, is a huge way. And your body will tell you. Once you start getting into that space, you just start hearing things, but it almost drives you nuts.
Contentment is also just listening and slowing down enough to listen to our bodies, because they are speaking to us like a lot. But you have to be able to slow down and, like what you said, like be patient and also like extend yourself to some of these resources and try things. What would you tell other people who are going to be listening to this, who are scared or nervous about listening to this part of ourselves? What kind of encouragement would you offer them?
To me, patience kind of has this sweet spot between discipline and grace with ourselves. It kind of holds us accountable while also incorporating rest into that. Sometimes we forget how much we need to celebrate not going to the workout today and getting in bed instead. And I think that patience kind of gives us permission to do that, to trust the process and trust our body and not what society has told us will heal us, but that our body actually knows best. Advice-wise, have patience, but also just trust yourself. You have it in you. We have it in us.
Courtney, I want to give you such a big hug right now. This conversation literally changed my life. And as I transition out of antidepressants, I'll most likely be listening to this conversation over and over again as a reminder of truth. In the show notes, Courtney's compiled a list of resources that can help you get connected to this line of wellness and other psychoeducation tools, so be sure to check that out. For now, that's the episode. I really appreciate you guys listening. Please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen. It really, really, really helps. It's a free way to support the show, and it makes such a massive difference in helping other people to find us and find mental health resources. And if you're wanting to interact with the community, make sure to find us on social media. We're on Instagram at underneathitallpod. And we have a Patreon. All of the money from that supports the show. So thank you, Patreon family. I really appreciate you guys. And yeah, you guys make me really happy. You can also follow me on Instagram at _Grizel_ for mental health resources. You can see my three precious furry lady dogs and ways I'm personally learning how to live a more balanced lifestyle. Intro music is created by a two-person band, which includes myself. You can find our music, including the song you heard today, on Spotify by searching Passiflora. Talk to you guys in a couple of weeks for our season finale.